Module 15, Post-Rut and Late Season. Chapter 3, Tactics for Post-Rut and Late Season Elk Hunting.
Here I want to give you an overview of some of the tactics, just some of the general principles that are going to apply to the post-rut and the late season. There's a lot of similarities in how we hunt the post-rut and the late season, both in terms of tactics, in terms of day-by-day strategy, what we're looking for. The biggest difference that you see in elk behavior is you really don't need one of these in the post-rut or in the late season. The elk, the bull elk, and again, remember, we're talking about mature bull elk on public land. We're not looking for cows or young bulls. We're looking for mature bulls. And we're not looking for elk on private land. We're looking for them on public land. The biggest difference between the post-rut and the late season is the fact that the bulls are almost in solitary mode in the post-rut. By the time the late season comes around, they're pretty much coming to the point of, all right, let's form our bachelor groups that we're going to spend the winter in. And that's why I always say that the post-rut is the hardest period to find a bull elk. He's solitary, he's solo, he's not hanging around with a bunch of buddies, and he's in some ugly, nasty places. He's not making noise, so you can't use a call to your advantage. That's the toughest time. And that's when most rifle elk hunts occur in the West. Now, when we get into the late season, you have another benefit besides the fact that they're in bachelor groups and it's easier to locate them, because just by probability, if there's five bulls there versus one, way easier to see a group of five than it is one. But weather. Very seldom does the post-rut period have the winter type conditions that give you a benefit in the late season. So that is why I break it out differently. Some people have asked me, well, why don't you just treat post-rut and late season as the same thing? We do have some differences in bull behavior, and we have differences in what the landscape looks like once that November-December period comes along. These periods are not a calling period. They're not any type of spot in stock with your bow, like maybe in the early season. This is going to be glass them up, get in on them, and make your shot. Of all of the tactics that you're going to use in a post-rut or late season period, use of your optics, knowing how to use them, having good quality optics that you can just sit there with your binos or your spotter for hours on end and mentally have the ability to do it, that is what's going to deliver success in the post-rut in the late season. If you are lucky enough to have snow on the ground during a post-rut or late season hunt, your job just got a whole lot easier. And here's why. I'm talking about reading tracks. I'm not talking about reading tracks by getting on the track. I'm talking about reading tracks from a half mile away, a mile away. And some people say, well, how can you know what's going on if you see tracks in the snow a mile away? Here's a couple things to understand. It's just the behavior of elk. Okay, if you see a group of tracks going across a hillside or down through a bottom area where you can just see their trails in the snow, and there's 30 sets of tracks, I can just about guarantee that that is a group of cows, calves, and young bulls. That's not what you're looking for. We're looking for mature bull elk. All right, I see a set of tracks higher on the ridge, and it's three tracks. I know that the bulls like to hang higher. The cows are usually lower. So what am I going to expect if I see a group of three tracks, November 10th, going across snow at a higher level? I know it's probably a bachelor group of bulls. You're looking and you see these same three tracks that are just trucking across, just straight lining it. Guess what? Those bulls are moving somewhere else. They are heading to a different sanctuary somewhere closer to the winter range. Odds are they're not here. Doesn't mean some more won't come through, but those tracks you're seeing, those are not the elk you're going to be hunting that day. Let's say you look over that way and you see three different tracks, but they're meandering and they're weaving and bobbing and going into the trees, coming out of the trees, they're stepping out in a burn or an avalanche chute, and they disappear. Those bulls were feeding. Those bulls are hanging out, making a living in their sanctuary area. Those tracks tell you those bulls are probably still there. those are the tracks and the bulls I'm going to hunt. It's a blessing if you can have snow that shows you that stuff. It gives you the confidence that, okay, I've got something here. I'm going to sit here all day long until those bulls come out tonight. Reading tracks, it's not absolutely precise, but it's very close to precise. And it will allow you to eliminate a whole bunch of opportunities, a whole bunch of locations, and you won't be chasing tracks that aren't what you're looking for. So I've told you that glassing is the primary tactic in the post-rut and late season. And I've also talked about how my glassing location sometimes might be a half mile, a mile and a half from the sanctuaries I want to be looking into. Well, the odds are, if I see a bull that morning, he's going to get to his bed before I can get over there, play the wind, and get in position. So let's assume, and we'll walk through this both as a morning situation and as an afternoon situation. I'm glassing in one of my glassing spots, and one morning I see a bull over there, see a group of bulls, whatever. They head into the bedding area, and now it's like, okay, I know they're there. They're not going to leave. They are there, and they're going to come out somewhere nearby there that afternoon. I do know that. Exactly where, I don't know, but I do know that's going to be what they do in the afternoon. So I'm going to use the remainder of the day to figure out, all right, what's the best way to get there? Get set up in a shooting position, either above them, across from them, whatever it is, with the wind in my favor, because as Corey has talked about time and again in his early season pre-rut, peak rut tactics, even in the post and post-rut and late season, you cannot fool an elk's nose. So when you go in there for this setup, you better be playing the wind. But the idea is you're going to get over there and you're going to be set up when that bull comes out. You are going to be ready and you're going to kill him. So you better have headlamps, you better have a good backpack, you better be capable and able to take care of a big bull elk laying on the ground on the mountain in the dark by your headlamp and haul stuff back out, because you're going to kill that bull that evening. So let's say you don't kill that bull that evening. One of the benefits of having went in there is you need to be marking this on your GPS, whether you have a traditional GPS or you have the app on your smartphone. The benefit of going in there in the daylight is now you're marking the trail. The trail tells you, all right, this is the easiest way. You can find the easiest way with the least amount of debris and headache in the daylight by walking in there at 2 in the afternoon. And even if that bull doesn't come out that evening, for some reason, even though I promised you you're going to kill him, say he doesn't. Now you can go out in the dark by following that trail, and you can easily be back in there the next morning because you've already marked it on your GPS. If that's my situation and I see a bull one morning that gets into his bedding area or a group of bulls and I don't kill him that evening, I'm back there the next morning. I stay there even until dark the next night. I know they are there. And I'll do that for at least another day, sometimes 2 days, knowing that sooner or later they're going to either stay out while it's daylight or come out before it gets dark. And that's when I'm going to kill them. I just want to make sure that you understand, in any of these post-rut or late seasons, if you find those elk, do not leave them. Even if you spot them in the morning and don't kill them that afternoon, don't give up on them. Be back there the next morning and stay there for the whole day. If you spot them in the afternoon and you go in there the next morning and they're not there, stay there all day. They might be back out that evening. You know they are there. Post-rut and late season elk do not move very much at all unless they are disturbed by hunting pressure. Very seldom do they just say, you know what, I think I'm going to head 3 miles over that way. If you've found them, stay on them, keep hunting your system, and you're going to kill one of them. So we've been talking about the post-rut period that is kind of the last half of October, and the late season that is pretty much November 1st to the end of whenever seasons end. One thing you're going to have then is a lot of hunting pressure for public land bull elk. It's when the majority of the rifle tags are issued is during the post-rut and the late season. So how do you deal with this hunting pressure? What does it do to elk? It's the primary reason that we always focus on sanctuaries. Hunting pressure means human activity. Human activity moves elk away from human activity. They want to go places where they're not disturbed, not bumped from their beds, where they can just, in a small 10-acre patch, just make a living to get through hunting season. What does hunting pressure look like? Well, it looks different throughout the day. It looks different throughout the week. It looks different throughout the season. We all know that hunting pressure is heaviest in the morning. Everybody's all excited. They jump in their truck, they drive out to the trailhead, and they start hiking it. Okay? I know that. So I'm just about always the first person to the trailhead. And I am going to be up there at my glassing location way before the sun comes up for two reasons. One, I'm kind of claiming my spot. You know, the normal rule is the person there first gets it. Some people don't adhere to that rule, but I want to go there and kind of have my spot. And as these other people, there's always a bunch of them, the majority of them, are not to their glassing spots when the sun comes up. They are the people who are bumping elk, who are pushing elk, and in my sanctuary locations, in my glassing spot, I'm gonna see those elk responding to hunting pressure. They're gonna be moving, and I'm gonna take advantage of that. I'm gonna see where they move to. I'm gonna watch where they go and where they bed down to get away from that pressure. And that's gonna help me solve the 90% of the problem of finding the elk. So we have daily peaks and valleys in hunting pressure. We have weekly, during the course of the week, let's make it Saturday through Friday. What happens on Saturday and Sunday? You get the big peak in hunting pressure. Instantly Saturday morning, the elk respond to that and they head to the deepest, darkest, ugliest places. The sanctuaries that are the hardest to hunt. The pressure subsides Sunday afternoon. Monday, okay, a few guys who are hardcore are still at it, a few on Tuesday. The elk sense that. There's less noise in the woods, there's less scent, there's less movement, less activity. By about Wednesday, Thursday, by Friday, the elk are starting to feel like, maybe season's over. They respond differently. Saturday, I'm gonna be back there in the deepest, farthest places from roads, or down in the deepest canyons, or at least glassing where elk would be heading to those deep canyons or those faraway places. Because Saturday morning, that pressure is gonna be the greatest. And I'm gonna be back there again on Sunday because the pressure is still there and the elk are just like, yeah, I know what happens on whatever day they call this. There's a lot of people out here. If I'm gonna survive, I better get way back in here, or way down in there, or way up there. So those are the places I'm hunting Saturday and Sunday. I'm kind of putting myself out in front of the hunting pressure. And by Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, I might start moving around a little bit, not worrying quite as much about all the hunting pressure pushing everything. And I also know that Sunday morning, those elk, there's a very good chance they're gonna be back in their beds before the sun comes up. And there's a very good chance, because of the huge amount of hunting pressure, they're not even coming out until after legal shooting light. But by Wednesday or Thursday, very often, they're like, it's pretty quiet around here. They stay out for 40, 50, maybe minutes, maybe an hour. And by Thursday evening, maybe they're coming out an hour before the end of legal shooting light. So there are things about hunting pressure that you can use to your advantage. You just need to understand, and it's very common sense, very logical, how elk respond to the hunting pressure. Let those hunters become a tool for you. And when I'm talking about sanctuaries, very often, when I remember earlier in one of the videos I talked about boundaries creating sanctuaries, very often the boundaries can create those sanctuaries of low hunting pressure. If you know that the outfitter over there, that he doesn't hunt his place on whatever day, use that to your advantage. You know that the elk might go and stack up there. Say he hunts Monday through Friday. The elk might stack up there Saturday and Sunday. But Monday morning, when he gets a new rotation of clients in there, they're gonna be after it. And when they get after it, guess what? Monday morning, they're gonna start pushing some of those elk back over to the public. Use those kind of things to your advantage. Think about what hunting pressure really is. Hunting pressure is human presence in the hills. It's that simple. And then think about, when are the peak periods, when are the low periods, and what are the behaviors of elk the further you get from those peak periods, and you're going to put yourself where the elk are, and you're going to kill one of them. Sometimes post-rut and late season is considered boring elk hunting because you're sitting there and you're glassing. But glassing becomes a game all and of its own. It's a mental game. It's a mental game of your body. It's a mental game of the conditions and just kind of the mental waiting game of you versus the elk. Who's going to blink first? So let's just talk about your body. You better have good clothes because the odds are it's going to be a little bit colder. You're probably going to be hiking in or hiking up. You're going to get sweated up. Do not leave the truck all bundled up. Leave the truck. This is usually what I wear when I'm hiking in November. A merino wool with a Jetstream vest like this, or any highly breathable clothing. In my pack, I have a puffy coat, and I have some sort of windstopper type outer layer. I have mittens, not gloves. I have a stocking cap. I have an extra pair of socks. Because the surest way for your mind to start kind of saying, oh, let's get out of here, is if your body is uncomfortable. You have to stay warm. So bring the clothes to stay warm, because if you stay warm, whether it's wind, whether it's temperature, or a combination of both, if your body is comfortable, your mind is going to be focused. So now that your body's comfortable, you are there, you are well before the sun up, you are there, and you know you have to stay there until the sun goes down, until its legal shooting light is gone. How do you mentally get through that? If you have somebody who hunts with you, that's a good way to get through it. I can sit there for a lot longer if I've got someone I'm sharing the glass with or sharing the responsibilities of covering this area or that area than I can with myself. And I know some people say, no, I like to hunt by myself. That's fine. If it's cold, start a fire. Do not hesitate to start a little fire. People see it in our episodes on TV all the time and say, aren't the elk afraid of a fire? No. The place they live burns. Every year there's fires out there. They don't care about fires. But it does two things. One, it keeps your mind off the fact that you're cold. And once you get the fire started, it warms you up. And if you've got two guys, three guys, you're kind of taking turns. Hey, you keep the fire going, we're going to glass. However it is. There are mental things you have to get through to say, all right, I'm going to be comfortable and I'm going to be focused. Now, understand, we've talked about how the morning period, that first half hour, maybe even later, you know, get the end of November, maybe it's that first hour of daylight, and then it's that last half hour, maybe the last hour as you get later in the season. Those are your prime time periods. If you need a nap, if you need to somehow, you know, check out in the middle of the day. But even then, don't give up on sanctuary areas. Be glassing, because in the middle of the day or the middle of the morning, whatever it is, a lot of times that bull or those bulls will get up, they'll take a pee, they'll go grab a little bite to eat, or they'll just want a different bedding place as the wind direction has changed. It's amazing how many times you'll just pick up, whoa, I just looked there. Now I see some antlers there. That's why it's important to mentally stay focused and be willing to do that all day long. I know it's a mental game. I know you aren't hearing bulls bugling. You're not running towards bugles. You're not calling them in. It's not that level of excitement. It's not that engaging. It requires a special person to sit there all day long for the whole season behind their glass looking for elk. But it works. There's a reason why the majority of guys who kill the most post-rut and late-season bull elk on public land are the guys who are the best with their glass. And part of the reason they're really good with glass is because mentally they can stay sharp and they can stay focused. Don't let the mental part of it distract you from doing what you got to do. Because once you find them, and that's how you're going to find them is with your binoculars or your spotting scope, once you find them, 90% of your work is done. Now you got to do the other 10% and figure out how to kill them.